Welcome to this audio issue of Distressed Investing, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. This issue was originally published on Thursday, December 11, 2025. Paint it white. Making minerals that make many products brighter. This competitive industry has slumped, profits and shares have plunged. There's upside post this year's declines. A veritable rock slide. We like the stuff this outfit mines. Titanium dioxide. Martin Fridson. Two very different men colluded on a criminal scheme for two very different reasons, and it didn't end well for either man. Walter Liu, a Malaysian-born entrepreneur, had the kind of polished, amiable demeanor that suggested success, yet beneath the surface, he was a man driven by a sneaky ambition. Ultimately, Liu's career was ended because of a colossal miscalculation. Robert Magirl, on the other hand, was an engineer, a technical mind, solid and experienced, but now aging and looking for one last payday after a long career. Their story was not about inventing something new, but about stealing something old, proven, and incredibly valuable. The proprietary process for manufacturing titanium dioxide, TiO2, specifically the highly efficient chloride process. The world's leading producer of this brilliant white pigment, used in everything from paint and plastics to food coloring and sunscreen, was the Delaware-based chemical giant DuPont. And Liu, through his Texas-based company USA Performance Technology, USAPTI, had promised a state-owned Chinese enterprise, Pangong Group, that he could deliver DuPont's secrets. Magirl was the key. He had spent decades working at DuPont's titanium dioxide plant in Delisle, Mississippi, before retiring in 2003. He knew the chloride process as well as anyone, from the precise ratio of raw materials to the minute adjustments in temperature and pressure that separated market leaders from also-rans. Liu, recognizing Magirl's value, had begun paying him consulting fees shortly after his 2003 retirement. Initially, the payments covered minor technical issues, but Liu's focus soon sharpened on the core secrets of DuPont's production. The scheme unfolded over several years. Liu didn't just ask Magirl for blueprints. He leveraged the engineer's detailed, personal knowledge. Liu would feed Magirl complex, often vague, technical questions, framing them as theoretical consultancy work for USAPTI. Magirl, drawing heavily on his memory and sometimes on documents he shouldn't legally have possessed, provided detailed answers. Liu then packaged this pilfered intellectual property, translating DuPont's nuanced process into what Pangong Group believed was an independent, innovative design for a new, world-class TiO2 plant in China. The money flowing from Pangong to Liu was astronomical, tens of millions of dollars over the course of the years-long agreement. Liu, in turn, funneled significant amounts to Magirl, disguising them as payments to his engineering firm. It was a well-constructed veneer of legitimacy, but the foundation was rotten. The walls began to collapse in 2011 when the FBI started investigating Liu for entirely unrelated tax and immigration issues. In a sting operation, Liu was cornered, and the broader scope of his dealings with Pangong came to light. The ensuing criminal case laid bare the theft. Magirl, driven by a mixture of pride in his life's work and the temptation of easy money, became a cooperating witness. He admitted giving Liu detailed technical specifications for one of the most guarded secrets in the chemical industry. In the end, Walter Liu was convicted on 20 counts, including economic espionage, in 2014, receiving a 15-year sentence. Magirl, for his cooperation, received a much lighter sentence of 30 months. The white powder of titanium dioxide, a symbol of purity and brightness, was suddenly tarnished by the greed and betrayal of those who sought to steal its secret. Why we like a certain white powder? The reason the Pangong Group was willing to pay Liu, who paid Magirl, to orchestrate their years-long scheme is because learning the chloride-based production process for creating TiO2 could provide the Chinese enterprise a considerable advantage in the tightly competitive market for this compound that for all intents and purposes is a commodity. TiO2 has many uses. It is the key factor in the success of Oreo cookies, aspirin, and living room walls. TiO2 is particularly in demand as a pigment used in paint to ingrain whiteness, brightness, and opacity, the quality that covers what's behind it. A handful of large companies account for roughly half the worldwide production of TiO2, with the balance coming from numerous smaller, and typically higher-cost, producers. Although it is sold in many grades and types, as mentioned, titanium dioxide is essentially a commodity product, meaning that industry-wide profits can move up or down sharply based on the price, which is dictated by TiO2 supply and demand. The Chinese Pangong Group was willing to pay for a differentiating advantage. looking for a recovery in titanium. Right now, the industry is near the bottom of a cycle and operating profit for the major players are at historic lows. This distress creates the opportunity to recommend shares of Kronos Worldwide, NYSE, KRO, a pure play bet on a TO2 recovery. Kronos is a Texas-based company founded more than a century ago and one of the leading producers of titanium dioxide. Last year it generated $1.8 billion in revenue, more or less in line with the year before. Operating profit, meanwhile, has slumped considerably in 2025, compared to 24, down more than 50% year-to-date through September 30. About 80% of Kronos stock is controlled by the estate of the late billionaire and bank regulator Harold Simmons, pictured below, whose main investment vehicles were his wholly owned Contran Corporation and two business conglomerates he controlled, Valley Industries and NL Industries. In 1986, Simmons took a controlling stake in NL Industries, formerly known as National Lead Company, which dates back to 1796 and was one of the original 12 stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average when it was created in 1896. NL controlled a variety of businesses, including Dutch Boy Paints, sold to Sherwin-Williams, SHW, in 1980, and Kronos, which produced the titanium dioxide essential for making paint. By 1986, NL had sold off almost everything except Kronos. When Simmons died in 2013, he owned 80% of Kronos stock through his various companies, now held by a trust controlled by his daughter, Lisa K. Simmons. We believe that the Simmons family control of Kronos is a positive for shareholders because it has and could provide funding if Kronos saw the opportunity to buy distressed assets from weaker competitors. But this Simmons family control also has a negative, as the family is unlikely to sell its shares, even at a premium to market prices, to a larger competitor. Therefore, a Kronos acquisition is unlikely. Discovering and refining titanium. In 1791, William Gregor, a vicar near Cornwall, England, moonlighting as a mineralogist, analyzed certain black sands and came upon an unfamiliar metal. Around the same time, German chemist Martin Klaproth discovered the same mineral and named it titanium after the titans of Greek mythology. History credits Vicar Gregor with the discovery of the mineral and Klaproth with the name. And in 1932, William Kroll provided an advanced separation process that is used to this day. Titanium is as strong as iron but 40% lighter and does not rust. By the 1940s, it was used to lighten the weight of aircraft, for the military and later for civilian aviation, and rust-resistant submarines. During the Cold War, the U.S. Department of the Interior designated it a strategic material. Today, it is also used for missiles, satellites, and a variety of high-tech equipment. Its supply has been plentiful. Roughly 95% of mined titanium is used for the manufacture of TO2, a brilliant white pigment that reflects virtually all light that strikes it. In contrast, black pigments absorb all light that hits it. As mentioned, titanium dioxide is valued for its ability to make things white and bright, like the filling of an Oreo cookie. Though titanium dioxide was first synthesized in the mid-1800s, it wasn't produced on a commercial scale until 1916 when two Norwegian chemists invented and patented titanium white pigment, also known as the whitest white. Titan Company, now part of Kronos, first manufactured it. By the 1920s, TO2 was replacing lead in paint, which improved both its quality and safety. As a result, demand for TO2 grew rapidly, and competitors created their own patented formulations geared to specific uses. Although the scale of these businesses has increased and the technology has advanced, the end products, various grades and types of white pigment, are substantially the same as the titanium dioxide that rolled off that first production line 109 years ago. TO2 has a wide variety of applications. In addition to house paints, it is used for automotive coatings, auto parts, and tools. It is also used in coloring plastics and in the manufacture of pharmaceuticals and paper. In the 1960s, the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, approved using titanium dioxide in cosmetics and in certain foods. Around the same time, scientists discovered that when TO2 is exposed to sunlight, it dissolves dirt and grime, meaning it could be used in environmental cleanups. More recently, TO2 has been used to improve the efficiency of photovoltaic cells, solar panels. MDPI Open Access Journals, Titanium Dioxide Nanoparticles, Prospects and Applications in Medicine. Daniel Zientel et al., 2020. Two titanium dioxide manufacturing processes. Titanium dioxide is manufactured using either the sulfate or the chloride process. Chinese manufacturers principally use the sulfate process, though its use of chloride has increased, while U.S. and European producers, including Kronos, lean toward the chloride process. The sulfate method uses relatively low-cost raw material, principally ilmenite, and requires less expensive equipment than the chloride method. In this process, the ore is mixed with acid, with each batch taking roughly 3 days to complete and requires significant amounts of energy. The final sulfate product is lower grade than the chloride alternative, suitable for standard paints and coatings, lower value plastics, and paper. The chloride method uses more expensive rutile as its raw material, requires a higher level of investment, but requires less labor. It's a continuous, rather than batch process that converts ore into TO2 within a few hours. The chloride process is considered more environmentally friendly than the sulfate method, since it requires less energy and generates less waste. TO2 made this way typically sells for a higher price. Currently, the spread is around 15%, and it's used for premium paints and coatings, higher value plastics, cosmetics, and pharmaceuticals. Here are the key raw materials for titanium dioxide. The primary producers of rutile, below, the primary raw material used in the chloride method, are Sierra Rutile, Iluka Resources, Exera Resources, Rio Tinto, and TAMD. Certain Chinese companies and the Chemours Company, a spin-off from DuPont, sell a synthetic equivalent suitable for certain uses. Most of these companies also produce ilmenite, below, which is needed to produce TO2 by the sulfate method. Additionally, Kronos has mineral extraction rights in Norway that enable it to produce almost all the ilmenite, shown below. The company needs to run its sulfate-based production. Although the market price of these minerals will fluctuate, the supply should continue to be sufficient to meet demand from TO2 producers. TO2 supply and demand. There's no official measurement for the worldwide production of titanium dioxide, due in part to a market-wide dearth of information from smaller producers, particularly in China. Industry watchers estimate current global annual capacity at 10 million metric tons. A metric ton equals 1,000 kilograms, or 2,200 pounds. According to S&P Global's Commodity Insights, the top U.S. companies produce 53% of that capacity. China accounts for 41%, with the remaining 6% spread around the world. Globally, five companies produce 51% of capacity. Chemours is a diversified chemical company that DuPont spun off in 2015. It is the largest producer of titanium dioxide, evenly split between the chloride and sulfate processes. The company's revenue stream is diversified, with other divisions producing refrigerants such as Freon and Opton, as well as specialty chemicals such as Teflon. Lomon Billions capacity is a close second. Most of its production uses the sulfate method, although it's been increasing its capacity to produce a higher quality product using the chloride method. The company will be adding 200,000 metric tons per year of chloride-based capacity, 2% of global capacity, over the next few years. Tronox is a hybrid. It's the third largest producer of TO2 and one of the largest producers of input product rutile. Tronox has a mining business that supplies much of the raw material it needs, but the company carries a high level of debt. Next comes Kronos and close behind Venator, formerly the pigment division of chemical manufacturer Huntsman Corporation. Venator filed for bankruptcy in early 2023 and emerged as a reorganized business owned by its lenders. Various of its operations are in the process of selling off assets, and in 2024 it sold to Kronos its 50% joint venture interest in its Lake Charles pigment, a chloride process plant that it had owned alongside Kronos since 1993. Growing market demand for TO2. Although estimates vary, the current size of the TO2 market in the U.S. is generally viewed as roughly $25 billion per year, which amounts to about 4 million metric tons annually. Market analysts project that it will grow anywhere from 3% to 7% a year over the intermediate term. According to Market.us, which provides research to Fortune 500 companies, demand for TO2 worldwide is expected to grow 6.2% a year between 2023 and 2033. This favorable outlook is based on a variety of encouraging megatrends. The construction of commercial and residential buildings is growing worldwide, a trend underpinned by population shifts to urban areas in developing countries such as India and China. Because TO2 is unparalleled in its ability to reflect light, it improves a building's energy efficiency, especially in warmer climates. Its ability to break down dirt and grime has led to the development of pollution-absorbing paint, a plus for developers seeking a green designation. Growing demand from the developing world will boost demand for plastics. According to the Plastics Industry Association, demand for plastics is projected to increase an average of 4.7% annually from in 2024 to $1.14 billion in 2034. The consensus is that demand for automobiles will rise 2% annually through 2030. The market for personal care products, a large percentage of which use TO2, is growing. The main drivers are increasing awareness of health and wellness around the world. Over the last 2 years, the major TO2 producers reduced their capacity by 320,000 metric tons, reducing global capacity by about 3% and their own levels by about 12%. The benefit from these capacity closures will be partly offset by Lohmann Billion's announced addition of 200,000 metric tons of chloride method capacity, which is scheduled to be phased in over the next few years. U.S. tariffs, China and anti-dumping laws. On March 4, the U.S. levied 25% tariffs on imports from Canada and Mexico, increasing production cost of TiO2 sold in the U.S. for Kronos, which manufactures a significant portion of its TiO2 in its Quebec, Canada, facility. These tariffs will also increase the import costs of rutile and ilmenite costs for Kronos and some of its competitors. In some geographies, titanium dioxide manufacturers benefit from tariffs intended to prevent Chinese manufacturers from dumping their product by selling it below manufacturing cost. For instance, in 2024, EU countries enacted duties of between $250 and $750 per ton on TiO2 imported from China. In October 2025, Brazil enacted tariffs of between $578 and $1,722 per metric ton on Chinese exports of chloride method titanium dioxide. How Kronos operates its business. In 1916, Kronos became the first company to begin manufacturing TiO2 pigment. DuPont followed a year later. Kronos has a 7% share of the global titanium dioxide market, and 85% of its capacity employs the higher-end chloride process, while 15% uses the sulfate method. Kronos operates facilities located in the U.S., Lake Charles, Louisiana, Canada, Varennes, Quebec, Belguim, Landsbruga, and Norway, Fredrikstad. Kronos now owns and operates the Lake Charles pigment manufacturing plant. From 1993 through 2024, the plant was jointly owned by Kronos and Venator. As discussed above, Kronos bought out its partner's 50% share of this plant, with an annual capacity of 156,000 metric tons per year, for $185 million plus up to $15 million in performance-based payments. Operating profit would need to increase substantially for performance-based payments to kick in. Kronos financed the purchase with $53 million in cash and $132 million borrowed from its bank lenders. Kronos believes that doubling its capacity in Louisiana will enable it to increase the sales in the U.S. of TiO2 produced domestically. As of September 30, the largest part of Kronos' workforce is in Europe, with the balance evenly split between Canada and the U.S. Digging deeper into Kronos' financials. In its financial filings, Kronos lists the four factors it considers most significant in determining profitability. TiO2 selling prices. The volume of sales and production. If production is greater than sales, Kronos adds to its inventory of finished goods, and vice versa. Manufacturing costs, particularly for raw materials and energy. Foreign exchange rates of the US dollar, particularly against the Canadian dollar, euro, and Norwegian krona. TiO2 revenue is denominated in US dollars and euros, while a significant part of the company's expenses are denominated in Norwegian krona. For the first 9 months of 2025, Kronos operating profit, which the company presents after depreciation, interest expense, and taxes, declined 56% to $89.7 million from $195.5 million in the same period last year. During the nine-month period, revenue fell 1.6%, manufacturing costs rose 2.8%, and corporate overhead expense increased 6.3%. The price of chemicals, raw materials such as rutile, and electricity often remain high, even when titanium prices and sales are low. And, of course, fixed costs per unit, labor, depreciation, etc. go up as production numbers decline. Overall, the company attributes the sharp decline to soft demand, leading to lower production. Running at a slower pace reduces profitability because fixed costs get spread over a smaller amount of output. Lower average selling prices for TiO2. Higher distribution and warehousing costs, mostly relating to shifting inventories in anticipation of U.S. tariff increases. All signs point to this level of weak performance continuing in the current quarter ending December 31. We expect that operating profit for 2025 will be in the vicinity of $100 million to $110 million, down as much as 60% from 2024. Management is committed to implementing a broad program of cost cuts to mitigate losses. The company is targeting savings in headcount, manufacturing costs, and corporate overhead. It hasn't yet specified a combined savings target, which it is likely to disclose when the company reports its Q4 results in early March. In addition to reductions on the expense side, there are reasons to believe that revenue and profit margins should increase in 2026. As mentioned, the TiO2 market should benefit from industry-wide capacity reductions. Recently enacted and pending anti-dumping laws should improve pricing in some of the company's larger markets. Chemours, an industry price leader, recently announced price increases on all grades of TiO2. Based on these factors, we are guardedly optimistic that Kronos' operating profit will increase next year. Putting a valuation on shares of Kronos. Based on the current stock price of $4.67 per share, including debt and adjusting for cash, the market is valuing Kronos at roughly $1.1 billion. Estimating average operating profit. We expect Kronos' operating profit in 2025 will fall to something like $100 million to $110 million from $253 million in 2024. But we believe that once the market for TiO2 ticks upward, Kronos' operating profits will eventually rebound. Looking at the period of 2019 to 2024, which included good years, bad years, and typical ones, Kronos' operating profit averaged roughly $170 million. If we exclude the best, $252 million in 2024, and the worst, negative $7.3 million in 2023, years from the calculation, the average is $193 million. We believe that over time, probably beginning in 2026, Kronos' operating profit will move back toward its average of between $170 million and $193 million. Because of a few factors, Kronos' average operating profit should rise. We base this belief on the company's acquisition of Venator's share of Lake Charles Pigment, which doubled Kronos' capacity there to 156,000 metric tons from 78,000 metric tons. That equates to an increase of 14% to the company's pre-existing capacity of 560,000 metric tons. This alone should add $15 million to $25 million to an average year's operating profit. In addition, although the company hasn't yet disclosed its cost savings targets, it's indicating that they will be substantial. We would expect the total to be on the order of $50 million in annual savings. Taking these factors into account and adding the average from 2019 through 2024, we would arrive at a new average year of approximately $250 million. Given the uncertainty surrounding how much of these improvements Kronos will achieve, for our valuation exercise, we'll use a range of $200 million to $225 million as Kronos' average operating profit over the course of a profit cycle. Choosing valuation multiples. To arrive at a valuation multiple for Kronos, we take into account how investors have valued it, as well as its competitors, Chermers and Tronox, which we believe should trade at a higher valuation multiple than Kronos. Chemers deserves the larger premium of the two since it has a diversified chemical business and it can produce almost twice as much TiO2 as Kronos. Tronox deserves a premium to Kronos because its Exero Resources subsidiary produces the raw material the company needs to produce titanium dioxide. Given that industry-wide operating results have been down sharply in 2025, we look at the 5-year average valuation multiples of operating profit. Our main takeaway is that Kronos' 5-year average valuation multiple, each quarter based on the prior 12 months of operating profit, is 8.9x. This comparable figure for Tronox is 12.6x and for Chermers is 14.1x. Taking all of these into account, we use a valuation multiple for Kronos in the range of 7x to 9x. Putting the pieces together, given average operating profit of $200 million to $225 million and multiples of 7x to 9x, we arrive at a valuation range of between $6.97 and $12.41 per share. The low end is roughly 50% above the current trading price of $4.67, while the higher end is roughly 250% above the current share price. As a cross-check, over the last 5 years, shares of Kronos worldwide have traded between $4.33 and $19.61, with an average price of roughly $11.28. It last traded above $10 per share in February 2025. Little current debt and decent liquidity. As of September 30th, Kronos had $626 million in debt, $598 million adjusted for cash. But the company has no debt maturity before March 2029. Which means management can focus on operating the business over the next few years rather than financing it. The company has a comfortable liquidity cushion of $300 million, $28 million in cash and $272 million it can borrow from its bank. The company expects to supplement this cash amount over the next few quarters by reducing titanium dioxide inventory, which was $659 million as of September 30th. We imagine this could increase Kronos' liquidity by $50 million to $75 million in 2026. In its financial report for the quarter ended September 30th, Kronos stated that it expects to remain liquid in the near term, which it defines as a year, as well as over the longer term, which it defines as 5 years. Risks. TiO2 pricing is cyclical and volatile and usually rises in line with global, regional, and local GDP. 51% of worldwide TO2 is produced by the top 5 companies. Some of these companies have greater financial resources and more advanced technology than Kronos. Titanium ore and its derivative, titanium sponge, the main inputs for producing TO2, are supplied by a small number of mining companies, so the market price is variable and suppliers often establish minimum purchase requirements for the contract period. Kronos results are subject to changes in foreign exchange rates. In 2024, 66% of the company's sales were made outside the US, most often in euros or Canadian dollars, while many of its expenses, including interest, are denominated in US dollars. The company is subject to many environmental, health, and safety regulations in all of the countries where it operates. Concerns over climate change could lead to additional regulations and higher compliance costs for Kronos. Action to take: buy Kronos Worldwide, NYSE, KRO, up to $5.25 per share. Martin Fridson. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Distressed Investing. We hope you enjoyed this audio issue. In addition to this issue, you should check out our best buys where we highlight 3 current portfolio picks that are at an attractive buy point today. You can find them under the best buys link on our site at porterandcompanyresearch.com.